Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to our second episode of Fort Laramie, where Kathleen Height has taken over as the main writer. I think it's interesting that immediately she starts introducing female characters, because if anything the show is missing, and she was insightful to see that, is it doesn't have any female leads. It's all male leads on this show, four males, and on Gunsmoke you always had Kitty that you could play off of and do things with. With this show, they always had to bring in a female character, basically, if they were going to have any, or be someone's wife and that sort of thing. But they really needed more recurring female characters, in my opinion. And it's interesting that she brings in a couple different female characters this week and to write for. She writes equally well for females and male characters. I never get the feeling when I'm reading her script or listening to her any of her shows that when she writes a male voice, it feels like a male voice. It doesn't feel like somehow a woman writing for a female voice. Whereas you get that a lot from men, especially Meston. Sometimes he would use females in his episodes almost like props. Like a lot of writers use kids as kind of props, where they're not really full-blown characters. They're just there to fill a space. And that's what Meston sometimes did with his female characters. Not always. Sometimes he had pretty deep female characters. But Kathleen Height, she can have deep male characters, deep female characters going back and forth. Great interactions between them. Great interactions between female-to-female interactions, female-to-male, male-to-male, all of that. Every combination. So I think that this episode really highlights that. So I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next time.
At the gallop! Oh!
Fort Laramie. Fort Laramie, starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Is that any better, Blake?
Honey, you're still pulling your wrist back. Now, here, watch me again. And I see this. If you just squeeze the trigger and hold steady on your target, your wrist won't fly around so.
But I'm not a cavalry lieutenant. I'm just his wife.
Oh, I know.
Oh, my. I didn't know anyone else was watching.
Captain Quince.
As you were, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir. This is my wife, Hester. This is Captain Quince, honey.
Ma'am.
How do you do, Captain?
Hester don't, she don't take to a pistol, but I'm learning her all I can. It's slow going.
Teaching, Blade. Teaching, not learning.
Teaching.
I was a schoolmarm back home, Captain. And I must say, Blade doesn't take to words any better than I take to a pistol.
Well, then you're both teaching, not learning.
Well, that's just it. Just it.
I try to tell her maybe she's got more need for a pistol out here for when words don't matter.
Well, I just don't see the need, Captain.
Well, that's too bad. Seeing it or not, there's need.
Now, you mean to tell me that your wife knows about pistols and rifles and riding horses and all kinds of menfolk cairns on?
I should have warned you, Captain. My hash, she riles easy.
Well, I'm not rile, Bladestock. I'm asking, that's all.
If I had a wife, ma'am, she'd know all I know about living out here. And pistols and rifles and riding are part of the living.
And I try to tell her, Captain. I do try.
Well, I declare, I am not stupid. But everything you say, it's not womanly.
It's not womanly country.
Meaning women folk don't belong out here?
Well, it depends on the women folk, ma'am. I'd say you have to want to belong. Afternoon to you.
Afternoon, Captain.
Well, I like that. As much as said I belong out here.
No, here's only one thing. You said nothing at a time.
By the mane, ma'am. You just can't get nowhere from no horse hanging on to his mane that way.
I've got to hang on to something.
Well, but...
You just don't ride side saddle, Sergeant.
Now, that's a fact. Oh, you looking for me, Captain?
Oh, just passing by, Sergeant. Afternoon, Ms. Meade.
Good afternoon, Captain. Guess I'm quite a spectacle, aren't I?
Oh, you look fine, ma'am.
I'd like to believe that. I don't know who's getting the worst of it, the horse or me or Sergeant Gorse.
Seems to me you're all bearing up well.
The captain's a sight better teaching women folk to ride than I am, Mrs. Meade. I tell you the truth, I'm no hand at this side saddle business.
I got business with the major myself, or I'd sure help...
Or you'd sure think of some other reason to be moving out, wouldn't you, Captain?
Well, yes, ma'am, I guess it would.
I don't blame you, either of you. And, Sergeant, if you can find some unsuspecting trooper and pass this duty on to him, you have my leave. And I won't be the least bit offended.
Oh, no, ma'am. Thanks just the same. You understand, it ain't you, Mrs. Meade. You're just as willing as can be. It's just...
It's just my petticoats, that's what it is.
Well, now, ma'am...
I guess the major will wonder what's become of me.
Now I've embarrassed you. Oh, help me down, Captain, before I break the post morale completely.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Captain.
Don't mention it.
You dropped something there, ma'am.
Not a petticoat, I hope.
This pistol, Miss Meade.
Oh, thank you, Captain.
You always carry it?
Well, Jim would scalp me if I didn't.
And he should.
I know. And I'm a good shot, too.
Miss Meade... Have you met up with Mrs. Stocker yet?
Mrs. Stocker? Oh, Blade Stocker's wife.
Yes, you know her?
Well, just to speak to at the Sutlers. I don't really know her. She and the lieutenant moved on to the post just last week.
If you ever do get to know her, you might show her you carry a pistol and tell her why.
She doesn't know why?
Well, Blade's doing his best, but she don't see the need.
I'll make it a point, Captain, but... I can't understand Blade. He was at Fort Phil Kearny with us.
Under Fetterman?
I thought she was there, too, but maybe not, though. Because the women at Kearny saw the need. Fast.
You want any of these boxes open, Mrs. Stocker?
Oh, now, don't you bother with that, Lieutenant Seibert. Just moving them in for me is a big help.
Glad to do it.
Oh, I declare, you think they give a body time to move into their quarters. Here it is, less than a week, and Blade's already drawn Officer of the Day.
That's the Army for you, Mrs. Stocker. You draw the duty, you do it, that's all.
Now, you're not going to start lecturing me, too, Lieutenant Seibert.
Sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean it to sound that way.
Oh, don't mind me. Blade says I rile easy, and I guess I do. But he's all so new to me. And folks from Captain Quinn's up and down have been mighty free with their advice.
Well, they're just trying to help.
Well, I'm sure of that. But there's help and help, if you know what I mean.
Yes, ma'am.
Now you, Lieutenant Seibert, helping me move my books and belongings in, I can appreciate that more.
Books, huh? No wonder those boxes are so heavy.
Mm-hmm. My school books. I taught the grades back home before I married Blade. Teaching was my whole life, till him. I tell you, I couldn't leave my books behind me. I just couldn't.
I can understand that.
You can?
Yes, ma'am. I brought a lot of books out myself from West Point. I attended the military academy.
My goodness, a real West Pointer. I declare.
Mrs. Stocker, are there any more boxes of yours out there on the wagon?
Well, not exactly. I mean, not on the wagon.
But there are more boxes somewhere.
Can you forgive me, Lieutenant Syberts? They're clear down at the post office. Now, I know you don't have the time to go all that
I'll
way.
I'll be glad to, ma'am.
Well, I'll be more than grateful. I make the nicest cherry tarts, Lieutenant. I'll see you get some soon.
I'd like that, ma'am. I won't be long.
Anybody home?
Oh, well, yes. Well, come in, won't you?
I'm Liz Mead, two doors down.
Well, I've seen you at the Sutlers, haven't I?
Yes.
Oh, I'm Hess Stocker.
I know. Is it all right to sit on one of these boxes?
Well, I'm afraid they're all I have to offer right now.
I feel like I know you. Weren't you at Fort Kearney with Blade?
No. We've just been married a month. I've never been anywhere with Blade but here.
Oh? Well, my husband knew Blade better than I did, but there's sort of a link between anyone who served there.
Fort Kearney?
It's up on the old Bozeman Trail. It's closed now. That's all Indian territory since the treaty, but
You must be mistaken about Blade, Mrs. Mead. He's never mentioned Fort Kearney to me.
But I'm sure he was there. There were 5 companies of infantry.
Oh, your husband's an infantry officer?
Uh-huh.
Well, that explains it, then. You must be wrong about Blade. He's in the cavalry.
There was a company of cavalry, too, under Captain Fetterman.
Well, it's not important, of course. But I know Blade would have told me.
Of course, I'm sure he would. And as you say, it's not important. Well, can I help you with anything?
No, thanks kindly.
Oh, my goodness, I almost forgot. I brought you a little present.
Well, aren't you nice?
I have a practical turn of mind. It's something no army wife should be without.
What? Well, these are cartridges.
Well, I just assumed yours was a .38 like mine.
Well, I don't know. You know about firearms?
A woman has to, out here.
Well, I don't understand. A big post like Fort Laramie, with all these men here to protect us.
But the men aren't always here, Mrs. Stocker. My husband and most of the infantry are out now. These are the facts of the West.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the Indians are hostile, and the fate of white women in their hands... Well, it's best to know how to defend yourself.
You've had to defend yourself?
Many times. At Kearney, the women held the fort in one Indian raid with less than a dozen men to help.
Were any of the women killed?
Some. And some carried off by the Sioux. Dying's easier.
I'm a school teacher, Mrs. Mead. I want to make my way out here teaching the young that you don't have to kill to get along. I think schools are more important than guns.
We can use the schools, Mrs. Stocker, and there's not a woman out here who won't want to help you get them. But till you do, you have to live.
I guess I can defend myself if I have to.
It isn't always a case of defending yourself. Sometimes a woman has to make a choice, a quick choice.
Of living or dying?
Of living or enduring. Mrs. Stocker, don't you know what happens to a woman if a hostile carries her off?
I think maybe that would be something for Blade to tell me, Mrs. Mead.
Yes. Yes, you're right. And when he tells you that, maybe he'll tell you what the pistol is for. Really.
Talk to you a minute, Captain.
Sure. Well, what's on your mind?
Well, Captain, maybe just off the side here. It's kind of personal, sir.
All right.
Would you be willing to do some talking for me, Captain? I just can't
seem to be getting that job done with Hess. Using firearms and all, I mean.
You sure you're trying hard at it?
I don't know what that means. I'm trying. I've been trying, Captain. There's a lot I told her. And a lot of times. A
lot you haven't told her.
Well, it looks like a big fort, Laramie. I'd have swore I wouldn't know anyone here from the old days. Sure didn't reckon to run into Miss Meade again. She told you, huh?
It's a secret you were at Fort Kearney?
Well, no, not that. It's, well, they're just hard words to say to Hess, Captain. It all happened kind of quick, like our marrying and moving out here. I know Miss Meade didn't aim to, but she sure didn't do me no good bringing up Kearney to Hess.
Miss Meade didn't get very far with your wife, and I can't talk to her about Fort Kearney. I wasn't there.
But we only been married a month. We don't even know each other right good yet. Now, well, how are you going to say to a brand-new bride that she ain't the first? I mean, you was married before.
I don't know that. But you're the one to tell her, if she's told. Blade, what's the matter with you?
There's a lot, I guess.
First you say, will I talk to your wife about her need for a pistol? Then you drag Fort Kearney into it. Now you're talking about you were married
before.
Well,
don't you see, Captain, they're all the same thing in a way. It don't come easy to give Hess a pistol and tell her to use it on herself if it looks like she's going to get took by Indians. Captain, I've done it before at Kearney. And that wife had to use that pistol on herself.
I didn't know that, Blade. I don't think Mrs. Meade knew it either. I'm sorry.
No, Captain. No, sorry's no matter. It's not your fault. Captain, can't you see? I done it once. And it don't set well a second time. It just might go hard with a man.
You ever said it all out this way before, Blade?
No, sir, not out loud.
You might feel some better. Now it's said.
Yeah, I reckon I might. Obliged to you. Listening anyways, Captain.
Blade.
Sir?
You'll want to say something to her tonight.
Tonight?
We're moving out tomorrow.
Can't I do that?
Oh, Mrs. Meade. Do what?
Mount like that. I'll bet you wear fewer petticoats than I do.
Might be I do.
Sergeant Gore says you ride beautifully.
I know some about horses.
Well, I'm learning. Mind if I ride with you this morning?
Oh, well, I'm going quite a way. That is, I have some business to tend to.
All right. I just thought with Blade gone a week now, you might be wanting some company. I hope you're carrying your pistol.
I'm carrying it.
That's good. Well, have a nice ride.
I expect to, Mrs. Meade. I'm going over to the Indian Agency. Talk to the agent about setting up a school.
You're not riding to the agency alone.
Now, don't start telling me the agency Indians are hostiles. Blade told me different.
But it's 10 miles from Fort Laramie, and you don't know what you'll run into between here and there.
I reckon I can take care of myself. After all, Mrs. Meade, I'm carrying the pistol. Not that I'll have a minute's need for it. Hut! I guess you could do with the water. More of a ride than I thought. Oh, no.
Miss Docker? Miss Docker, are you all right?
I'm fine. But for you coming on me this way... you know how near I came to firing on you?
I've been trying to get within earshot of you all the way from the fort. This is a very stupid thing, riding off alone this way.
I might have shot you. Seems to me you're the stupid one.
I suppose I am, but you've got to realize the dangers out here, Miss Docker. At least with the two of us, we're protection to... Wait. What? Wait, it's over there. In that brush near the trees. Something big.
Well, how can you tell? I don't see anything.
It moves big. Timber wolf, maybe a wildcat.
I hope not.
I hope that's all it is.
You're just trying to frighten me.
Hold your pistol steady toward that big tree. And be quiet.
It's an Indian.
You're not afraid, Hess. Pick up your pistol and show him you're not afraid.
I can't. Don't let him.
Stop. Stop where you are. We're not afraid of you. If you have something to say, say it and go away. You understand this pistol? Go on. Go away. Leave us alone or I'll fire. You understand?
What's he gonna do?
One more step and I'll fire.
Is he dead? Did you kill him?
He's dead.
He'd have killed me. If it hadn't been for you, he'd have killed me.
No, he wouldn't, Hess. Not for a long time. Let's go home.
You reckon she's hurt somehow, Captain?
No, I don't see how.
You want I should go with you? I'd be proud to.
I'll do it, Gorse. It's my place.
Yes, sir. I sure feel mighty bad for her.
Yeah.
Her being so new here, not taking to the life easy. I might just look in on her tomorrow, lend a hand, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, you do that, Gorse.
Well, night, Captain.
Good night, Gorse. Miss Docker.
Oh, why, Captain Quince. You're about the last person I expected to see. Oh, is Blade with you?
Can I come in, ma'am?
Oh, well, of course you can. Please come in. I don't know where my manners are. I guess it was seeing you, and if it was anyone, I thought it would be Blade.
You... want to sit down, Miss Tucker?
You've come about Blade, haven't you? Something's happened to Blade.
He's dead.
He's dead?
Sometimes it's better hearing it right out. You want to sit down now, ma'am?
Yes. Yes, I think I do.
Would you like a drink of something, or do you want to hear about it?
I want to hear.
It happened quick, Ms. Docker, and if it's got to happen, it's best quick.
He didn't know? He didn't suffer?
No, ma'am. One shot, clean, that did it. I don't know what it'd mean, but Blade would want it just that way.
I guess he would. Captain, We didn't even know each other yet. There hasn't been time.
Yeah, he said that, too.
That night before he left, he kept trying to tell me something. He'd try, and then he'd fret a while, and then he'd try again. Finally, he just threw that blame pistol on the dresser, and he said to me, "Take it, Hess, honey, and know how much I love you." That's the last words he said to me. I think he was trying to tell me something, Captain.
I think he told you something, ma'am.
Know how much I love you. Oh, Blade. Blade, honey.
Miss Tucker, if I can do anything...
You can go. Leave me be now. I want it that way for now.
You'll be all right alone?
I gotta find that out for myself, Captain.
Yes, ma'am. I'm right sorry, Miss Tucker.
Captain?
Yes?
You brought him back, did you? Back to the fort?
We brought him back.
I'm glad.
Night, Miss Tucker.
Captain Quint.
Oh, morning, Sergeant.
You heard about her, Captain, Mrs. Stocker?
What about her?
She's gone.
Gone? Where? How?
I went over there right after Reveille, like I planned last night. I couldn't raise her, so I figured she was sleeping heavy. On the way back, the corporal of the guard told me some woman rode through the main gate not 10 minutes ago.
Why didn't he stop her?
Well, he didn't know her, or what's happened to her or anything. Captain Quincy knew one thing. She was carrying a pistol like she knew what to do with it.
You said 10 minutes?
Yes, sir. You gonna find her, Captain?
I was too scared to fire it before.
You all right, ma'am?
I'm all right. I aimed to use it, Captain. Turn it on myself. I was too scared to do that, too.
No need for that.
No matter, I couldn't do it. It's a pretty morning. Got no right to be. But it's pretty.
It's new. It's a beginning. That's always pretty.
We were beginning, Blade and me. And I was beginning on my own. To get a feel like I belonged out here. But you're right, Captain. It's not womanly country.
It still depends on the woman.
I'm a school mom. Teaching was my life, till Blade. I reckon it's my life again now.
You still got a life. Or don't you see the need?
Need?
Schools. We can use them out here. On the post, on the agency. Someone has to start them. Someone has to want to.
Someone who could do some learning while they were teaching. I might fit the bill, Captain. I got a lot of learning ahead of me.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper, musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell as Lieutenant Syberts, with Gene Bates, Lynn Allen, and Lawrence Dobkin.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier and the troopers who fought under Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry. Each of us has an important part to play in defending our own locality as well as our country as a whole. If Los Angeles, Chicago, or Cincinnati is bombed, it will directly affect every farmer in North Dakota or miner in Kentucky. Won't you give a few hours of each week as a ground observer or a worker in a filter center to help your country? Become a Ground Observer Corps volunteer in your community. Write or telephone your nearest Civil Defense Center or write to Ground Observer Corps, Air Force, Washington, D.C. Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Chester.
Mr. Dillon?
Are you going hunting?
No.
I saw all kinds of wild turkey about a mile down the Arkansas yesterday.
I ain't going hunting, Mr. Dillon.
What's a gun and all the shells for, then?
Well, shotguns was made for more than shooting birds with.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Dillon, you ever hear me talk about Live Oak County?
In South Texas? Sure I have. According to you, it's a hideout for bandits.
Yes, it is. And they've got a saying down there that if the law ever did catch any of them, there ain't enough good men around to act as a jury to try the bad ones.
Well, that's very interesting, Chester, but you're a long way from Live Oak County now.
Well, part of it's moved up here.
What?
Azel Ledbetter. He's in Dodge.
Azel Ledbetter? Is he an outlaw?
No, sir. But I seen him at the Long Branch, and there's only one thing he's here for, Mr. Dillon.
Well, what?
To kill me.
All right, Chester. Are you going to tell me why Asa Ledbetter is here to kill you?
It don't matter why, Mr. Dillon.
Okay. I'm going to go in there and talk to him.
I'd assume you didn't.
I don't like people getting killed in Dodge, Chester. Even you. Now, you wait here, huh? Hello?
Oh, say, you're the marshal.
Your name Asa Ledbetter?
How'd you know that?
Chester told me.
Chester?
Yeah, Chester Proudfoot.
Well, okay, Marshal, he got my name right, but I don't recall his.
What?
I never heard no Chester Proudfoot. Glad to meet you, though. Buy a drink?
Oh, thank you.
Say, there was a fella in here a while ago, I remember, because he was staring at me so hard. He heard me say my name, too. I was talking to a cowboy about finding work around here.
Where are you from, Ledbetter?
Texas.
What part?
Amarillo.
Ever been in South Texas?
No, never have. Marshal, what's this all about?
Chester thinks that you came here to kill him.
Now, just look here, Marshal. I don't know this Chester fella. Never even heard of him. I don't go around murdering people.
I hope that's true, Lynn.
Of course it is. And I don't like nobody dragging down my good name, Marshal.
Nobody is. So long.
You just asked anybody from Amarillo about me, Marshal. They can tell you.
Chester?
I feel like a darn fool standing out here.
Are you sure you haven't got Asa Ledbetter mixed up with somebody else?
Not hardly.
He claims he never heard of you.
He's been looking for me for years.
Why, Chester?
It don't matter why, Mr. Dillon. If I'm dead, all that matters is I'm dead.
Why don't you take a few days off, huh? Go fishing or something.
You don't believe me, do you?
I didn't say that, Chester.
Well, you'll be sorry, Mr. Dillon. You'll be real sorry.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggart, really started something. Tonight, the Calypso Boys join in. Ready, amigos?
Packs more pleasure, packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Well, Kitty, that was a real good dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you.
Thank me?
Well, I thought you were paying for it.
You're the one who needs a vacation, not Chester.
Oh, but you're a rich woman, Kitty.
Let's talk about Chester. Does he really think Asa Ledbetter's after him?
Well, that's what he says.
It's not like Chester to make up a thing like that.
No. Matt? Hey, you stay here.
No, I'm going with you.
It's a couple of drunken cowboys.
You going after him?
Mr. Dillon!
It's Chester, Matt, down there by the alley.
Come on.
What's the matter with his arm? Looks like he's been hurt.
Yeah.
He shot me, Mr. Dillon. He shot me.
One of those cowboys?
No, Asa Ledbetter.
What?
I seen them cussed cowboys coming, so I ducked in the alley here. And Ledbetter was down at the end of it, just waiting for me. I think he just hired them fellas to set up a commotion so he could get a shot at
me. Here, let me see that arm.
The bullet went right in here, Mr. Dillon. It didn't break nothing, though.
Ah, Chester, you've been hurt worse than this a dozen times. Now, look, if you ducked in the alley, you were probably facing the street, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
All right, then Ledbetter wouldn't have been behind you. The bullet entered from in front.
It was him, I tell you.
Or the wild bullet from those cowboys.
You think I'm lying?
Well, I think you're worrying yourself into seeing things.
I'm going up to Doc's, if I can make
Now, wait a minute, Chester. Where's Ledbetter staying?
Well, he told me the Dodge House, Matt.
All right, I'll go talk to him.
Sure, you go talk to him. How many times do I have to be shot around here before anybody believes me?
How long you been in your room here?
Oh, I've been taking a nap, Marshal. Up until them drunks out there woke me up.
Chester says you tried to shoot him a few minutes ago.
Now, Marshal, I'm getting sick and tired of this Chester. What's he trying to do anyway?
He's pretty certain about it.
Bound and determined to get me into trouble? I'd doggone if I know why.
There must be some reason.
Well, sure, and if there is, I don't know it. I'll be glad when I find me a job and get shut of this town. Never did hear nothing good about Dodge anyway.
We try to keep it peaceful.
Oh, sure, but it's like you say. Probably ain't enough good men left to act as jury to try the bad ones.
Uh-huh. Now just where do they say that, Ledbetter?
Oh. I don't know. You heard it before, ain't you?
Yeah, I've heard it before. It's a saying down in South Texas in Live Oak County.
Well, that may be, Marshal. And I heard it in Amarillo. Now, ain't that possible?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Marshal, listen here. If I come here to kill a man, what did I be waiting around for? A change of weather? It don't make sense, does it?
No. No, it doesn't make sense. Any part of it. How does it look, Doc?
Well, it's just a scratch, man.
A scratch? I suppose if I come in here scalped, you'd say the barber just give me too tight a haircut.
Now, Chester, be brave, boy. Yes, there we are. In a week, you'll never know you got hit.
Well, it's a mercy it wasn't my gun arm.
Chester, I told you Asa Ledbetter was in his room the whole time.
You mean he told you?
I asked the desk clerk on the way out.
And he was lying, too.
Chester, how long since you've had a good night's sleep?
Now, Doc, don't you start that.
Well, you admit you didn't actually see Ledbetter in that alley. But next time you'll see him all right, won't you? Whether he's there or not.
Have you finished doctoring my wound?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Getting mad won't help you.
Well, maybe it
will. Well, where are you going now?
Who cares where out I'm going?
He'll get over it, Doc.
Yeah, I hope so. The only thing I can figure is that he's got this Ledbetter mixed up with somebody else.
Yeah.
But it'd certainly help if he'd say why he thinks he's after him. Because... Matt?
Yeah, what is it, though?
Come over here at the window.
What? What's going on?
Look, down there in the street.
That's Asa Ledbetter.
And Chester's standing there about to shoot him.
Yeah, I'd better hurry, Doc.
Getting plumb good and tired of you.
Then why don't you do something about
Chester.
It?
Chester.
You stay out of this, Mr. Dillon.
I don't like gunfighting, no matter who starts it.
I didn't start it. He come here to shoot me.
Marshal, he is crazy. He ought to be locked up.
Sure, I'm crazy. I should have called you out before. Now, you going to fight or not?
No, I ain't going to fight.
You scared?
I got no quarrel with you.
Are you scared?
Leave him alone, Chester.
No.
Then tell me what this is all about.
No.
Now, Chester, why don't you just go off and get drunk or something?
Hey! Chester!
Now will you draw? Now will you?
Oh, Marshal, I ain't gonna take much more of him.
I said, are you
all right,
gonna
Chester,
draw?
That's enough. Now you come with me.
You're a dirty coward.
You come with me, I said.
You're with him, ain't you? You and Doc and everybody.
Maybe you are crazy, Chester.
Sure. Oh, sure.
Well, where are you going?
I'm
going
to get me a drink. Alone.
Say, where are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your car? Getting ready for dinner? Oh, I see. Just relaxing in your favorite easy chair. Well, I'd say you're in a good spot right now to really enjoy a Chesterfield. You see, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. It stands to reason. A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild, yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Is that you, Doc?
Oh, Matt. Why, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, man.
Yeah. You been on a call?
Well, I haven't been romancing the ladies. Yeah. Oh, is Chester asleep?
Yeah, he's asleep. But not in the office.
Why not? Where is he?
I locked him in a cell out back.
You locked him in... What?
He got drunk, Doc. At sundown, he was as drunk as I ever saw him.
Well, maybe he needed it, Matt. Maybe it'll bring him out of all this.
Well, something's got to.
Yes, it does. Well, I'm going to go to bed. You better go, too.
Yeah, I am, Doc. I think I'll use Chester's bed in the office tonight.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, good night, Doc. Thank you.
Don't move, Chester. This here's a shotgun. All right, now get off that bed and get over to the window. Go on. Better. I'm gonna sit down here and light the lamp now, but you just stand steady. The shotgun's right across my knees. Now, Chester, you and me, we're going... Marshal? What you doing here?
Well, I was trying to get some sleep.
Well, you don't sleep here.
It's Chester's bed, all right.
Where is he?
He's around. Somewhere.
Where are you going? Stand still. Marshal, stand still. I mean it.
Well, I was just going to close the back door here. You left it open.
I want it open.
All right. I'll open it wide.
Here, Marshal. No call for that. All right, where's Chester at?
I don't know where he is, Ledbetter.
You're lying.
Yeah, I'm lying.
He got drunk this afternoon. You brought him over here. I thought you put him to bed, but since you didn't, there ain't but one place he'd be. Right out there in a cell behind you.
You walk right past him on your way in, Ledbetter.
Get out of that doorway, Marshal.
No.
I'll shoot you if you don't.
You'll shoot Chester if I do.
Now move, I say.
I can't oblige you, Ledbetter. I'm sorry.
I'll kill you, Marshal.
Don't shoot again, Chester.
Mr. Dillon? Is he dead?
Yeah. You hit him in the head with the first shot, Chester.
Pure luck. I heard you kick that door. It woke me up.
So I wonder anything could wake you up tonight.
Well, I don't feel so good, but I ain't drunk no more. Say, you got me locked in here.
Yeah, I thought of that, but I forgot to take your gun away from you.
That was mighty careless of you, Mr. Dillon.
Well, it doesn't matter now.
You knew I had it. You were going to let him shoot at you so as he'd wake me up and I'd have a chance at him. I guess I was kindly wrong about you being against me.
You know, it might have helped things if you'd have told me why Ledbetter was after you, Chester.
I just couldn't, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, why?
It had to do with a lady.
Oh.
She's dead now. But I didn't want nobody talking about her. Saying her name. Nobody. Can you understand that?
It'll be daylight soon, Chester. Let's go brew up some coffee, huh?
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Thank you.
In a moment, our star, William Conrad. Vacation coming up soon. Here's how to pack more pleasure. Make sure you have a couple of cartons of Chesterfields in your suitcase or in your car's glove compartment. A touch tells you Chesterfields are firm, packed full. Your taste tells you they satisfy the most. So when you do your vacation shopping, ask your dealer for Chesterfields. Buy the carton.
You know, the early frontier years were lusty and brawling, and men happily fought each other as a matter of course. But next week, it's the man who refuses to fight that causes all the trouble. And that was the West. Good night.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Bill James. Featured in the cast was Lawrence Dobkin as Asa Ledbetter, Harley Bear as Chester, Howard McNear as Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. Live modern. Smoke L&M.
Live modern. Change to L&M.
Yes, have an L&M. No other cigarette you can buy, plain or filter, gives you the full, exciting flavor you get through the pure white L&M Miracle Tip. Through the modern Miracle Tip, L&M tastes richer, smokes cleaner, draws easier. So light up, free up, let your taste come alive. Live modern. Smoke L&M. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.